Let's introduce everybody so people know the voices.
Right. I'm Tom Winsek. I'm doing keys and a whole bunch of other stuff.
Yeah, he's kind of like the technical brain behind how we orchestrate all of these things that we do.
I want to know more about that. So
yeah.
Before you say who you are, and let's find out what that means.
Right on. So I'm Chris Rosenow. I play guitar.
I'm Justin Vernon. And I sing in this band, Volcano Choir.
So tell me what you meant by that. Tom is the
Yeah, I mean, Tom kind of, you know, in order to do this, there's two aspects of this, right? There's the rock aspect where it's the guitars through the amps and everything, which we obviously need to bring, but in order to...
It's a seven-piece band on tour.
Yeah, so we have that aspect, but then we have the aspect of we really wanted to bring the record into a live situation as accurately as we could, build on it, you know what I mean, and just kind of resonate with the audience and really get it big, but... In order to do all that, I don't even know what Tom does. But, I mean, he does insane things.
Let's ask him.
Yeah, I mean, break it down.
I'm not going to get too technical.
We actually don't mind technical.
Okay. There's a computer on, a really nice computer on stage, but we're not using it really for backing tracks. It's like Justin's vocals are going into it.
Okay.
And then he has a little controller. This is just one instance of what's going on. A little controller that he can control harmony effects.
I see. And Justin, you have this lectern.
Yes.
Which I love the look of this thing.
Yeah. I would have never, the type of person being that I am, I would have never picked a podium.
That's a podium, little, right.
The pulpit?
It's a pulpit. It's way too intense and way too on the nose for what's going on. But it works out kind of perfectly because there's a lot of gear that is required, high-end kind of voltage controllers and everything, to make everything sound really, really good, to be able to work with what Tom is doing with my voice, what I'm doing to control different layers of my voice with all this internal programming that Tom is doing. And so it works out because I need to hide all that stuff and it needs to be nearby me.
Right.
So
would it be safe to say that what you have laid out on the computer are different vocal effects, that there is a mixer and controller of sorts that Justin fools with when he wants to get to a certain sound?
Yes. Well, and specifically harmony. So like, for instance, we're doing Still, which is our version of Justin wrote when he wrote Woods.
Woods is my version of the song I sent to Volcano Choir originally.
Yeah. When we're doing that, he has all these scenes with all these different harmonies. And when I say that, I mean like literally like the computer processes and then creates harmonies. So he sings one note and then there's like a fifth or a sixth below or in a third up and octaves and stuff like that. So it sounds, he goes, and a chord of vocals comes out. And then we're looping that.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I ask, what is it, Reactor? Is what program?
No,
is
we're using Ableton. And then the harmony stuff is all the Antares sort of stuff, the harmony engine. And
not to get too nerdy into the technical stuff. But until very recently, I've never been able to do any of that. You know, and we have like the biggest...
When you say not to do any of that, you mean in a live situation?
With that powerful of processing, like Apple computers are the closest thing that we have. There needs to be way more, I think, like powerful stuff for what people like we're trying to do, and we're not in the industry of making chips and whatever. but this is the most powerful setup that I've had and that we've ever worked with. And
this is the takeaway, I think. I mean, all the nerdy stuff is awesome, but the takeaway is that we can literally do whatever we want to do. There's no thought of just like, and there was no thought in recording the album, oh, we're never gonna be able to recreate this live. So in the live setup, there should be no thought of, oh, well, we can't recreate this. It's like, well, no, let's figure out how to recreate it. And do it without backing tracks.
Right.
And do it without a click track. I mean, we have to use a click track a couple times, like on Woods, because there's live looping of Justin's vocals, like he's adding layers upon layers.
And a click track just gives the drummer something to pace, which paces then the whole band.
So he hears a... Yep,
something,
but I mean, we're all playing our instruments and everything. Right. It's just the live.
Sure,
looping.
You are. Come on now, let's be real. Now.
No, that's a big part. I mean,
it's a huge part.
The whole tech part of this that we use facilitates bringing the live performance out, and that's what we want to do.
And I've gotten to the point now. I can control all this stuff and like still play my piano parts because it's everything's wrote. And I can still play my piano parts and like rock out and stuff and sing back up. And
so you guys are talking about like recreating what you've done to make the music that you start with. So let's talk about how you, as a band, get together and make songs. I mean, so that I understand, like, we're at the end product here.
Sure.
I hate the product's probably the wrong word. As a listener, we are getting the results.
Yeah.
I call the results.
I can talk about that, good. I think, yeah. Well, I have an amazing perspective on being in this band because we've been sharing and creating music together now for longer than I've been doing my side project Bon Iver, you know. And before that, I was a younger man in Eau Claire, just like going to college, and had an incredible experience when Tom, who was living in Eau Claire at the time.
Also as a young man.
Also a young man.
We're the same age.
He came over to our house where I lived with Brad and Phil Cook, and he played us 2004's Collections and Colonies of Bees Customer, which is the top within the top five favorite most important pieces of music in history to me.
And the band that most of the members of Volcano Choir
are now comprised of, pretty much. And it is no longer the same members that recorded on that record that are in Collections of Colonies of Bees now, but basically I had a rearrange of my life and how I understood music and what I wanted to do with music, and I didn't know these people. But through Tom, and Tom ended up joining the band later as well, Tom introduced us to Chris Rosenau and John Mueller, these people that are...
John's a drummer.
John's the drummer, who continue to be extremely deep sources of inspiration for me as like a living person, artist, whatever. And so when we come into this band and when we get to spend time together, there's a deep friendship there. There's a deep sense of respect, and there's a deep sense of like gratitude to just be able to share the gifts that these guys have to give to the band. So to go back to your original question,
do you remember? Because I was kind of getting fuzzy.
I sort of do. Basically, Chris is my favorite guitar player, and he just like makes up all these pieces of music that create the wall of Volcano Choir. And all the people in between, and Dan and Matt Skemp on bass, yeah, and Tom, create all the middle. And Tom and Chris did a lot of the writing, 90% of the writing of the album, just the two of them kind of on their own. And
is it done in a room together? Done like you're shaking your head now.
Yeah, I can. Well,
no
I,
one heard that, but I'm just I'm play by play here.
Yeah. So so the way that we kind of started this record was kind of a natural jumping off point from the way that we had approached the last record on Map. That record was done a lot more, it was started in different places.
How do you mean by places?
It was started by me at my house, and, gotcha. And it was started okay. by Tom, and it was started in different places, and it was more of a sending out type of situation, right?
Less then, of a live band in a room.
Totally less. Yeah. I mean, no live right, band no in live a room. Band. Yes, no live Zero. Band in a room, right?
Right.
And so we got the opportunity to go play Japan because of some of the our friends that we've had from other bands. And we kind of were so excited that we just said, yep, we're doing that. And then we said, wait a minute, how do you play these songs? You know, and so then we had this total challenge.
Do you feel like your own cover band? Is that
actually
that's great. That's really I've never good... heard that before.
No, yeah.
Yes. So we had to figure out how to do that. And so like playing those shows kind of gave us this extra knowledge and momentum to kind of...
Because I will say it wasn't just a cover band. It was like a cover band that needs to make these songs work in a live situation. That's just this weird studio album. We never thought about how to play this stuff live even. Yeah. So like, and I think when we did that, when we sort of reinterpreted them and then saw what worked in a live atmosphere, we took that information into the writing process then right. for this album. So it started the
That's
same
That's very way. Cool. I like that.
Yeah. So it started the same way. Like we started with little sketches of sounds and sort of, you know, guitar parts. But all the time while we're like building it up and making them into actual songs, we had that knowledge and that information from what we did in Japan.
And so that as a springboard, we knew that we wanted to take this further as a group. So, I mean, now with that information, we started writing these things
for Repave
together, you know, in kind of subgroups. And so we'd start...
Again, the together is still in separate places?
Mm-hmm.
It started. Yes.
Yeah. So you know the DNA of this band is always the same, kind of intentionally ambiguous sketches to leave room for whatever anyone wants to do, right? And so then the difference, the sound of Repave, the reason it sounds different.
It sure does. It sounds so different from the first.
Yeah, record. And the reason is that there are people in the same room together, reacting to each other and having a blast and
right.
and just having a great time. And so all of those little subgroups happened over the course of 2.5-3 years in the same place.
Here's my disconnect. The first record is all sort of file sharing kind of stuff.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. And it comes together. And then you learn from that, you go out and you perform that stuff. And then you come and you start making the new record and you learn from the first record and figuring out how to perform that first record that wasn't meant to be a performance record. So now when you go and do this new record, are you at any point in the writing process writing together, or is the writing done and then you're just trying to figure out how to play them?
No,
you know,
so
the difference. Or in other words, when you're getting together, are you composing still, or you're just kind of performing someone's idea?
I think Chris said it the best. I think that
and I missed it.
No. I'll re kind of
yeah. Do it, please. Do it.
There's an intentional space left for the other people that you want to play music on the song with you in the band, and Chris and Tom did a lot of the structuring. They put a lot of the skeleton together for the music, and then people like John and I come in very late, and we'd be listening, like Acetate is a good example. I remember getting a copy of it with like very scratched drums, just at practice, Chris's guitar parts and Matt's playing bass and all this stuff, but it's rough and it's sort of like, it is what it is. But I'd drive around in my car for 3-5 months just sort of and over time, that thing, when I was like, oh, I want to write to Volcano Choir this week, and I got it, and I'm able to like call Chris and be like, oh, dude, this song's feeling like this, or I call Tom or I call John, and it develops over a long period of time because we leave that space in there. It allows for the music to really unfold in a way that feels like permanent.
Why did these come out to be much more song-based than the first record then?
I think, and I'm not going to speak for Chris because Chris is right here.
Just put your hand up his back and watch his lips move.
I just want to say that was an intentional thing for Unmap to sound ethereal, and like that was the goal, and we always kept that in mind. That was Chris's original goal when he started writing that stuff. But this time, the goal was different. We saw what we could do as a band. We saw like what felt good in a live situation and what felt good when we played together in the same room, and we wrote to that. So that's the difference, you know.
It really works. I mean, it's just, I love Repave. I love both records, but I truly live with this one more.
Thank you.
Because I find more opportunity to want to hear it. Unmap was a record that I needed a special place to want to put it on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Repave is a record that I can drive with.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yep, totally.
And not go off the road.
And that was the idea.
And stay on the road.
We literally called it Unmap. I mean, it's the idea is that it is this like special own zone, you know.
I want to ask a silly question, which is, I madly love the backdrop, and I know there must be a story to the backdrop.
Super not silly question.
We get to talk about Michael?
Oh, good. Please do. Tell me more.
Michael Brown is a designer who I've become very dear friends with.
Can you describe the backdrop, too?
The backdrop is a bunch of recycled materials that we had laying around in my barn.
Seriously, it looked like a topographic map of a country I didn't know.
Yes, and which is the whole... I'm glad you said that, Bobby, because that's Unmap, is the deconstruction of geography.
Yeah, that's true.
And Repave is kind of the deconstruction of mind and spirit. And the backdrop, Michael Brown designed, he's a guy that was originally kind of in New York forever. He's currently doing the Nationals lights and design.
I know this guy. I think Wilco, he's done some stuff on stage with Bryce and Aaron.
Yeah, he does all their stuff in New York and everything.
I met this guy.
And so he just like, he's insanely busy. He's doing his biggest show ever with the National. And he just moved to Minneapolis because I told him to.
And that's kind
of
true.
Of course, that's the reason.
I was just like, dude, get out of there and come to the Midwest because you're the greatest, probably the greatest human in the world.
Yep.
And so we moved to Minneapolis, and in between tours with the National and Grizzly Bear and everything, he came out to the house and was just listening to the music and just like, oh, how do we do this? And he basically created what I think is the cover of Repave, which is an amazing Corey Arnold photograph from the Bering Sea, and just kind of did it up in this like nautical rope and painted it, and it reacts to light so well. And
yeah.
Sitting in front of that stuff while we're doing our art, while we're doing our songs, it insanely is important to
it is
to
a giant translate. Wall hanging.
Yes.
It looks like it weighs a ton. It looks like it's all made of wool, but you're saying rope.
Yeah, it's
erosion cloth is what it's called.
I don't know what that means.
Me neither.
Yeah. Well, I really appreciate this. Thanks so much for the great music.
Thanks, bro.
Thank you.
Good
thanks
luck on the rest of the tour.
Thank you.
Cool. I know a lot of people waiting to see it.
Thanks, man. It was a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, cheers.
It was a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Likewise.